This is an interview with Adrian Broad on the 15th of February 2018. The interviewer is Leslie Courtney. The interview is being recorded in the Palmerston North Central Library. The interview is being recorded on a Sunny IC recorder. Before we go any further, I want to confirm that you understand that this material is being recorded for archival purposes, primarily for Manawatu Heritage.
Yes.
The recording will be held at the N. Matheson City Archives. Access to and use of your interview will be subject to the conditions agreed by you in the agreement, and we'll sign that at the end. Are you happy about that?
Yes, I am, Leslie.
Thanks. Okay, Adrian, just very briefly about your life. You were born in 1951 in the Hutt Valley. You grew up there, went to school there, and you were married with two children.
Yeah, at the age of 17, I took on the position of office junior at Dominion newspaper. I'm the oldest of seven children. My father, Patrick Hindmarsh Broad, and my mother, Shirley Marion Broad. And the Hindmarsh connection is quite interesting because my late great-grandfather was the first governor of South Australia, Sir John Hindmarsh. So I have some interesting background information about that side of the family. But yeah, started at Dominion in 1969 as a 17-year-old and remained in the newspaper industry for 28 years. Moved to Palmerston North from Wellington Newspapers, which was part of the INL Group, in 1986 and joined the Manawatu Standard as the Assistant General Manager. And within 2 years, 1988, I became General Manager of the Manawatu Standard.
Now, what took you into that first position at the Dominion? Was there any plan, or was it one of those things that just happened?
Oh, well, I was never too bright at school, so all I wanted to do was get into the workforce. I'm sort of not a tradesman type person. But really, it was an advertisement in the Dominion advertising for an office junior. And that's what happened in those days. And there were only four other applicants in the whole of Wellington for that position. And so my mother took me in on the train from Taita in Lower Hutt, and I was interviewed. And the assistant advertising manager, it was the advertising department, and he interviewed me, and I think I probably got the job because I lived in Taita and he lived in Nainai, which was suburbs of Lower Hutt. And subsequently I found out he didn't have a motor vehicle, drank a lot of alcohol, and then I was quite useful to take him home in my car to Taita. So it was like a little apprenticeship for a year as office junior, and then I did it for a year, and then someone else came in to replace me, and I moved into office position with Dominion Sunday Times, and worked through that. So do you want me to stop?
Yeah, no,
or
no,
carry
just
on?
Whenever you feel like stopping,
yeah.
Stop, and I'll just take you forward. I mean, I presume then you didn't realise that you were going to end up with an almost 30-year career in newspapers necessarily at that
no,
time.
No, no, in those days, in 1969, there were lots of jobs around. Probably office work probably suited me. But how fortunate was I to as a 17-year-old, straight from school, the first 2 weeks of my time there, the Dominion printers and journalists went on an industrial strike, and I walked into the front building in Victoria Street in Wellington, into the Dominion building, and I was chased down the street, Bond Street, connected to the Dominion, by an irate printer, because I tried to walk through a picket line to get in to do my job. And at that point I thought, well, if this is work, I might go back to school. So that was a tough introduction, because I had to, during about 2 week strike it was, that I had to continue to help get the newspaper out with scab labour, you might say. So management were working on getting the newspaper out, and I, as the advertising junior, was asked to help. So in my first 2 weeks of my career, I was a strike breaker working with management to produce a newspaper, but I was only just turned 17. So, within 3 years, INL Group, and it was owned by Rupert Murdoch. I mean, he only took INL Group over in 1967. So they sent me to Australia for a 5-week study tour of newspapers in Australia in 1971. And I went to the Adelaide News, the Melbourne Age, and the Sydney Morning Herald. And once again, I was caught up in an industrial strike at the Sydney Morning Herald and was asked to help move reels of newsprint around in Sydney. So it was 2 weeks in Melbourne, 2 weeks in Adelaide, and 1 week in Sydney. And then I came back to my job in the Dominion newspaper. But I was very fortunate to work under Ian Wells, who was the advertising manager. He was chairman of the New Zealand Lawn Tennis Association, a very prominent business person. And I learnt a lot from him. Right through the 70s, I progressed through different advertising roles. I was advertising sales representative, looking after Sir Bob Jones's advertising account in the early 70s when he was forbore on running the Carmen for Mayor campaign, and Bill Rowling, Citizens Against Bill Rowling. And boy, you handle Bob Jones, and his style of the advertising was wrong and abusive phone calls. I can handle anything here in Palmerston North, I always thought.
Well, despite you saying you didn't think you did very well at school, you were obviously quite successful in the advertising industry, because, even to send you to Australia for a trip would have been a mark of your ability and their respect for what you were doing.
Yeah, well, it's just attitude, and I love working. I mean, 2 years... Yeah, around about that time, 2 or 3 years later, the company sent me on a tour of the North Island selling advertising for the National Yearling Sales, horse sales in Trentham. And my job was to drive around the North Island, going to all these flash horse studs, talking to legends, the Williams family, the Sir Patrick Hogan now, of course. I met Pat Hogan in those days, Trelawney Stud, the Lowry family in Hawke's Bay. I mean, I was only 19, and here I was, I love horse racing, and here I was travelling the North Island selling advertising to legendary horse stud masters, who are all passed away now. Sir Patrick Hogan's still going. But so the newspaper industry was incredible times, I mean, it's not like it is now, obviously, but then I was advertising manager for Sunday Times, and then, of course, we had the merger with the Dominion and Evening Post, and we moved over from the Dominion building to Willis Street into the Evening Post building, and I was assistant advertising manager of the Evening Post, one of the biggest newspapers in New Zealand at the age of just turned 30, advertising administration manager for Wellington Newspapers. Then I went on a tour of Australia with 30 other INL people to look at technology and these things called computers to produce newspapers, and that was great. And then I was advertising manager of Truth, for goodness sake, and that was interesting times. But it took me all around New Zealand, visiting advertising agencies for Sunday Times, Truth, because they were national newspapers. And so at the age of 34, I moved to Palmerston North within the group as Assistant General Manager of the Manawatu Standard.
Did you apply for that position? Was it a suggested position?
No, I just tapped on the shoulder. I remember General Manager of Wellington Newspapers saying, "Oh, Mike Robson, the Managing Director of INL, wants to see you. He wants to have a chat to you." And I'd just been appointed to the as a trustee of the INL superannuation scheme, and I thought, oh, it was probably something like that. So I went over to him. Now, you know, we were buying up newspapers and buying up groups of companies throughout New Zealand. And so at the age of 34, I toddled over to Mike Robson's head office, INL head office, and he said that he'd been watching me and knew me very well, and would I consider taking up the position of Assistant General Manager of the Manawatu Standard in 19. And so my wife and I and the two children moved here in January 1986. Mm. And of course within 2 years, Mike West, the General Manager of the Manawatu Standard, moved to run INL's printing division in Taita and Lower Hutt. And once again, I was called down to Mike Robson's office. I drove down there knowing that Mike West was leaving. And Mike Robson said, look, I'm not considering anyone else. We're not advertising. We're just going to appoint internally. And I'd like you to take on the general management of Manawatu Standard Limited. And so that was 1986, and I think I just turned 35.
So what, because I don't know a huge amount about the newspaper industry, so I understand what a journalist is and the editor and everything. So what exactly is a general manager? What were your responsibilities in
that role?
Well,
see, I came through the marketing and advertising side, and people seem to think that I was a journalist or an accountant. I suppose the editor has the power of producing the newspaper every day and the content of it. The general manager really is responsible for circulation, accounting, and editorial, of course, you know, the staffing side of it, human resource, and of course I was the printing side, so... It takes a lot of sectors to produce a newspaper. Yeah. So the general manager has overall responsibility. Every week by Thursday morning, I would send the results of financial results of all our newspapers within the Manawatu Group to head office in INL. And then Mike Robson and his team would send it to Rupert Murdoch in New York, wherever he was. So Rupert Murdoch knew on Friday morning, the week after I'd produced all these newspapers, and they knew the profitability of each newspaper in INL and News Limited with Rupert Murdoch. And that was my responsibility, to ensure they were each profitable and running well.
Did INL, were they pretty much a sort of sleeping partner that left you to get on as long as you were profitable, or did they have did they influence you have any real influence on the actual newspaper itself?
Yeah, Leslie, good question, because you know, there was Southland Times Group, there was Nelson, Timaru, Christchurch, Wellington, obviously, Waikato, New Plymouth, Auckland, you know, all these groups of companies. But twice a year, the general managers would meet with the INL manager, managing director, and we would really be left to our own devices, but we were always weekly reporting to the board of INL, and then Mike Robson never influenced the editorial content of the paper. John Harvey was an excellent editor of the Manawatu Standard, and they were great days, you know, and John Harvey, they worked pretty hard early in the morning. But in those days, editorial staff would get the newspaper out at lunchtime, and then they'd go to the pub across the road. I was trying to think of the name of it. But I was unpopular one particular summer, I brought them all back. I said, this is unacceptable. You can't just sit in the pub all afternoon, even though you are editorial people, because they always seem to be a bit precious, some of them, when the accounts and advertising staff and people printing staff are working, you know. So I had to break down that that mindset that alcohol, you know, couldn't continue to drive the newspaper group. And their argument was, well, if we go to the pub, we pick up tips or stories for the next day's paper. But I didn't accept that. But over time, you know, I even had to change the smoking rules. I mean, editorial people were pretty stressed people, and sitting over there with computers smoking all day. We were the first business in Palmerston North to have a smoke-free policy. And staff, we had to have a smoker's room, or they go outside, but eventually, of course, it all became smoke-free for any business. But we led the way with that, with Alan Ireland, who was a very anti-smoker sub-editor, and he had to work amongst all these smokers. It's appalling.
It's shocking. Is that how it started, because of some people being adverse? Because even in those times, so many people smoked that I guess the rest of us just put up with it and didn't think we had a voice in controlling it.
No. Well, yeah, it was people like Alan Ireland who led the way. And I mean, there were drugs being smoked, you know, not just in Palmerston North, but I remember Blue Hazes smoke in the reader's room in the Dominion newspaper, you know, and it was people working at night, because different, you know, when you worked on the Dominion, because you had night staff. Mm. I mean, I worked during the day, but I had to work the printers at night. And it was driven by them going to Britannia Hotel on Willow Street at 10 o'clock at night, which was their dinner break, and down as many pints of beer as they could to come back at 11 o'clock and get the paper out at 1 in the morning. And if they weren't drinking alcohol, they were smoking drugs. I mean, I'm talking the early 70s, you know. And drinking sessions on a Friday night. Management led the way, you know, female, male staff. I mean, you read a lot of now about, you know, harassment of people in the workforce. Rife. Just the way it was in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, just, you know, something you didn't question necessarily.
And for me as a 17-year-old walking into that environment was incredible. And so I became street smart. You know, no one puts much across me, you know, because I've been there, I've sorted it out. I've worked with the hardest cases you'd ever wish to meet in the newspaper industry. And of course, coming back to the newspaper here in Manawatu, we were buying up newspapers, CD Farmer. I'd get phone calls from head office. Oh, we've just bought the Hara Star, we've just bought the Bay Weekender, we've just bought the Wairarapa News, and it's all coming into Manawatu Standard. Fielding Herald, of course, of Manawatu Herald and Foxton, and of course the Daily Newspaper. And they just added all these papers to build up the group, and of course Stylex Print were part of it as well. So it was 1986, I started there as the assistant, and of course during my early days we upgraded the building, and that was a couple of $1 million project. And out the back, of course, was the press room where Plumbing World are now. We built a press room there, and an old press was brought in from Australia to be refurbished and put in there.
$2 million budget would be very high in those days.
Oh, yeah. And so I managed the building project, but I was only 35, 36 with no, you know, I mean, education is what you learn on the way through. But the newspaper industry in those days was a hard case industry, you know,
How would you describe the Manawatu Standard when you first came up here, from what you were used to? Was it,
see, the Manawatu Standard was owned by the Nash family.
Mm.
And 3 or 4 years before I came up, in 1986, the Nash family sold out to INL. But INL retained a local board. But there was no way the Nash family could continue to control the Manawatu Standard because they didn't have the financial resources to invest in the building, and technology was coming on stream. And INL had the backing of Rupert Murdoch. And so INL took on the, bought out the Nash family. And as, if you read the 7-day book written by Les Very way, way back about all the various INL groups, there's a very, very interesting chapter about the Manawatu Standard. And that was written up till the time that I arrived. Hugh Morrison was the local chair of the board because he was Cooper Librand accountants here in INL. He oversaw the merger. And of course in those days they didn't want to upset the local people because the newspaper was pretty precious in those days, you know, everyone owned it. And to think that Rupert Murdoch and these boys from Wellington were coming in and taking on the Manawatu Standard. But, you know, I'll say now that if it wasn't for that, you wouldn't have a daily newspaper in town for those times. But, you know, we were selling 26,000 copies a day. I remember getting the circulation people in saying, well, let's strive to get to 30,000. Well, you know, you'd be way, way, way off that mark now because of the technology changes.
I think I saw in a newspaper article that it said it was a time of immense technological and structural changes in that period that you were there.
Yes.
So, and that would have been computerised and...
Yeah, that was introducing the technology, yeah, and a new press. But the technology, you know, I mean, I worked in hot metal days when, you know, you made plates out of hot lead. And then a matrix put on that, and an imprint made, and that was attached to the press, you know. And then, of course, the technology all changed. And you know, I mean, I had 220 staff. When I left, it was probably, 160. I left in 97, so I'd had 9 years of managing the newspaper, but there were positions there that are very bureaucratic. I mean, the Nash family, I mean, you know, once again, one of the first jobs I did was clean out the grog cabinet in the general manager's office because, you know, and there was one particular person there, I think he was employed for many years to update Matt, ensure the stationery was up to date, put the bets on for the printing staff down at the TAB, and ensure that the Nash family got home safely after lunch after drinking heavily in the office. I mean, those, you know, no disrespect to them, but that's the way it was in the 50s and 60s, I suppose. So I had to introduce change through technology. And change of taking on more newspapers within the group and changing the attitude of staff. And I had to go through and make people redundant. You know, one day I lined five people up and said, well, I'm sorry, you've been made redundant. You know, it was a painful time.
What was the most difficult, would you say? Was it making those structural changes like or new technology, or was it really dealing with attitudes and moving people into a new era?
Well, Leslie, I mean, it was driven by the unions. Industrial strikes nearly monthly. You know, if it wasn't the journalists going on strike for wanting more pay, it was the printers. And, you know, placards and strikes, you know, paper not being produced because the newspaper's on strike. Abuse of phone calls from staff, and you know, it was a very unpleasant time because it was driven by militant printers and militant journalists and you know, very intellectual people. And now I struggled with that, you know, and I struggled with industrial relations. INL had an industrial manager, you know, and but this was around New Zealand. You know, I remember a friend of mine, him and I were going to the Melbourne Cup And we'd planned this for a couple of years, that we were going to the Melbourne Cup. And a couple of days before I was due to fly from Palmerston North to Auckland to Melbourne, he had flown from Auckland to Melbourne, and it was all set up, you know, we had organised accommodation and everything. And the printers and journalists went on strike. And I got a phone call from Mike Robson, because he knew I was taking leave. And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, Adrian." He said, "You can't take leave." He said, "You're the first off the rank as far as wage movements are concerned for the group. And you've got to stay behind and control this, because if it gets out of control in Palmerston North, then it will filter through the rest of the group and it'll become a very costly exercise for the group." And so I had to remain. I had to ring my friend and say I couldn't go. Mike Robson, I think, sent me a bonus of a couple of $1,000 for travel and holidays and to make up for costs that I'd done booking to Melbourne. But, you know, we had to work as a group, and there was no way that I could be around to allow a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6% wage increase when head office or Rupert Murdoch was saying, "Look, you only can do 2. I had to be here to manage that process right through.
What do you think might have been the most, I suppose there's two different questions really. What do you think was your greatest achievement, but what do you think was your proudest moment as well? They may be the same, but they may be something different.
Oh, in 1996, we were judged the best provincial newspaper in New Zealand. And John Harvey and I went up to the Media Awards, and we won that award. So that was an achievement. I think, you know, moving the newspaper into colour, for goodness sake, and seeing the first newspaper come off the press in colour. I think, you know, I didn't have a confrontational bone in my body, you know, and I probably wasn't really suited to the hard work that needed to go into to be a tough, hard-hitting general manager. But I think the achievement was to get all these community newspapers bedded into the group without any real confrontation, and achievement of having staff working together with me, and getting a good team around me, and to still see the newspaper being produced every day.
How important, or what was your relationship like with the editor? Was it a close, did you have to work closely together?
Yeah, I think also an achievement, Leslie, on financial terms. I think I recall that when I took over, the profitability of the organisation was about $800,000 a year. When I left, it was $2.5 million a year profitability. And the target for INL for Manawa 2 was to get up to $3 million. And that was, but I believed, a step too far in 1997. And so that's when I started to think about my future within the group. My relationship with the editor was great, with John Harvey. You know, there were times that people would ring me not wanting their sons and daughters' names in the paper because they're going through a court case for drink drive or alcohol or drug offences, and business people would ring me telling me to take the story out of the paper. I left that to John Harvey to make the decision, and I got offside with the business people who threatened to pull their advertising out if I didn't do it. But John and I were good mates, and was, you know, I mean, an incredibly good relationship.
Was he the editor the whole time you were there?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And he'd write these articles, you know, whimsical articles, and he wrote some about me. And, you know, I mean, it just, you know, I've been so blessed to work through an era of newspapers, which were very much a family, you know. I mean, it was distressing to have to lay people off. But I knew all the families, I knew the kids, and there's still people wave out to me now and remember me as the general manager of the Manawatu Standard. So in 1997, when the pressure went on, and all starting to get under pressure financially, I got a call from Mike Robson and his assistant, managing director Rick Neville. The plan for me at the age of, 47 or something, to move to Auckland to become the Assistant General Manager of News Limited in Auckland. And I decided that my kids were still, you know, young, settled in Palmerston North. I disliked driving around Auckland. I used to spend a lot of time up there. So I dug my heels in, really. I said, I don't think I can get to the $3 million. I don't want to go to Auckland. And the technology was getting to me a bit, because I'm not a technical, I'm not very good on the technical side. I handle it all right, but so there were changes coming. So there was change, financial pressure, moving around New Zealand with various positions in INL, particularly Auckland. Then I decided that 28 years, it was time for a change. And so Mike Robson and I had a talk in his office, and he accepted what I had to say. We parted company. And then I spoke to Michael Willis at the Palmerston North City Council, because I knew a lot of people. I worked and I proved that I could run a business. And he had a position coming up, a new position at the City Council called Economic Development Officer, and he thought I would be spot on for that new role. And within 2 weeks of leaving the Manawatu Standard, I was at the City Council's Economic Development Officer. And there were rumours around why I left, and, you know. And so I had to ride through some of that. But then after that, I became Vision Manawatu and the council merged, and I became Associate Director of Vision Manawatu, and then Deputy Chief Executive of Vision Manawatu. And in the course of 2002, I was tapped on the shoulder to become Chief Executive of Aranui Hospice, and I did that for 8 years. And that took me up to 2011, I think, because I did a year at the hospice just doing fundraising, because that was my skill and we needed money. So I concentrated on that, let someone else do the management. So how blessed am I to have all that sort of career? And then that led me into standing for council, and I've always polled well. And the District Health Board, I poll well there. And now I run the Diabetes Trust as a part-time position. So newspapers, yeah, always in my blood.
The I did notice that when you started, you were quoted as saying that you were dedicated, you wanted the Standard to be dedicated to serving its community. And I think in your life, you've obviously demonstrated that the community is very important to you. Mm. How important was that, and how did the Manawatu Standard actually exhibit that it was a community newspaper?
Well, yeah, that was important to me, but it's important to the staff. They all understood that, you know. It was just, you know, we sponsored a lot of events. We supported Rotary clubs with sick children. You know, I've got photos in my scrapbook of, you know, young children benefiting from the sponsorship and money from the Manawatu Standard. Families benefited from the Manawatu standard. Sport Manawatu was established because of my commitment to put money into the establishment of Sport Manawatu, Manawatu Rugby Union, you know, the Manawatu Racing Club. But, you know, there was lots of community activities. Either we put free advertising in the paper for them or we gave them cash. So that was how I always saw the Manawatu standard being part of the community. And, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, you know, I sponsored the Christmas function for Chamber of Commerce every year. And all the business community would, you know, come to the Manawatu standard at the back building there and have a big function. And, you know, we were closed down by the police one year because they spotted us from Fitzherbert Ave and we were making too much noise at 10 o'clock. And they suggested that we close up and go home. So once again, but then because we did that, advertisers were approached from me, by me occasionally, to get some cheap advertising and to block up a shortfall and classified, and they supported me because they knew I supported a Chamber of Commerce. So, and there were families, you know, there were kids, you know, doing sport, you know, Chris Gemmell, the New Zealand triathlon runner. His mother and father approached me and said Chris was looking at raising money to become a triathlon runner. He was only 14 at Awatapu College. So I got him in cleaning cars, gave him some money, and the family still remind me about that. So that's the community connection. And of course, when I went to the hospice, that was community, the council's community, the Diabetes Trust's community, and the District Health Board's community. So my own personal outlook on life, I was able to use those organisations that I managed to help the community.
Was when you were with the Standard, was that at odds with INL at all, or was that a, did you have to persuade them that that's what newspapers should be doing?
No, not at all. Mike Robson was keen, as we gobbled up all these papers, to keep that local connection, and INL used to put out a magazine, INL News, every three or four times a year, and that was filled with sponsorship and support for communities throughout New Zealand. Mike Robson was very, very pleased for us to do that, and you know, sometimes the INL board would come up here for meetings, you know, open the press and open a new building. And, you know, Sir David Beattie was on the board. He was patron of the Rugby Museum. Mike Robson was a rugby nut, so we had our meet the business community at the Rugby Museum in Cuba Street. You know, they loved the newspaper being involved in the community, so it just suited my personality really well.
Looking at newspapers today, what state do you see them in, do you think? Do you still hold an interest in newspapers?
Oh, I feel sad. Yeah. You know, the editor and the general manager of a newspaper in any provincial or city in New Zealand, probably worldwide, had mana. If you were the editor of the local newspaper, you were a very prominent citizen. The general manager of the Manawatu Standard. You know, if I went to functions, you know, I remember going to opening up a bowling tournament at Takaro, and one of the old boys there said to me, tell me, you're the general manager of the Manawatu Standard. I said, yes, I am. Really? Yes. And he couldn't comprehend, as a probably a 70-plus-year-old, that this 35-year-old was actually general manager of his newspaper in Palmerston North. And because the Nash family and everyone, you know, you had to be 50, 60, 70 to be a general manager of a newspaper. And it just floored him. He just was wiping a table and just shaking his head in disbelief that this 35-year-old was actually managing the Manawatu Standard. I suppose sometimes I did that myself. Yeah. So no, I deal I know technology has changed and there's social media and all that sort of thing, and but it does sadden me to learn that the circulation's down and down and down and down. There's no general manager there now. You don't see the editor around like they used to. People say to me, who's the advertising manager in there now? I've got no idea. So they've had to reduce and retrench and reduce their staff numbers. And of course, a lot of the production of newspapers now done out of Palmerston North. The paper's printed in Wellington, for goodness sake. Ads are set in, you know, some Asian country, and accounts are done in Auckland. And so here you're probably lucky to find 40 or 50 people there, whereas in my day we're up to 220. So yeah, it was a sense of sadness, but a sense of reality that that's the way it's going to be. Whether the standard stays 7 days a week, 5 days a week, no, what is it, 6 days a week? Yeah, whether that stays 6 days a week, you know, I mean, or whether the Manawatu Standard gets gobbled up by the Dominion, and the Dominion comes up, have a couple of pages of Manawatu news in it. You know, I see that happening. That could happen. You know, recently I wrote a letter to the head man of Fairfax saying, please don't reduce your number of sports reporters. We're going to chop them out and just have national sport and no local sport. So I think I've got Grant, the mayor, to help with that, and they do. They got rid of one and kept one. But you know, you imagine local newspaper without sport, local sport, and I've done it with racing. I mean, you know, we used to have, you know, two racing reporters. Yeah. Now there's no one. You know, so, but that's change, and I've got to accept that.
It's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, look, thanks very much for coming and talking, Adrian. I've really enjoyed it, and I've learned an awful lot as well. So, but just to finish up then, what's a lasting memory of your time at the Standard? What's the most important thing that you take with you?
Oh, it's a people business, you know. Everyone had to work together, you know, the editorial people write the stories, sub-editors, the printers had to, you know, print and make up the pages, the press crew had to make sure the press was maintained and press the button, the circulation people had to get the paper distributed out there with networks of contractors, the accounts people had to ensure that the accounts were out on time for profitability. The advertising sales representatives had to go into the marketplace and sell advertising. And so there was a lot of strands to producing a newspaper within the group. And so it was an organisation that we had a lot of fun. We worked together well. It had to be a team effort. And when I left for Standard, a lot of people were sad that I was leaving, and people still tell me that. I was the best general manager they ever had. I was there 9 years. They probably, you know, and I know since then, managers have come and go, but no one's ever lasted any more than 2 or 3 years. So I was proud of that 9 years, I love the newspaper industry, and I was very privileged to have the opportunity to be a general manager of a major group within the INL group. Within 2 or 3 years of me leaving INL, Mike Robson passed away, suddenly out on a run, early 60s. And within a month or so, INL broke up. Rupert Murdoch sold a share, Fairfax came in, and INL has never been the same since. It's always been Fairfax. So that was sad to see. For my 9 years there, I was very proud to keep the circulation up and improve the profitability from 800,000 to 2.5. Didn't quite make the 3 million, but I would say now that it would be nowhere near that. Mm. So there you go.
Thanks very much, Adrian.